So like I said, drinking did something for me that nothing has ever done for me up until the point I did my first line of cocaine, because then cocaine did for me something that drinking never did for me or anything else in my life ever did for me. And it just made me feel like Superman. And then right when I did that, I knew that that was what I wanted to do.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. This episode is brought to you by these sponsors.
Navigating the college journey can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. At College Knowledge Foundation, we're here to guide students and families every step of the way. From choosing the right college to crafting standout essays and understanding financial aid, our virtual sessions and free consultations provide the tools you need to succeed. Join the growing community of students and families who've discovered how to take control of their college journey. Visit College Knowledge Foundation to learn more, book a session, or explore our free resources today.
A&M Pizza, authentic Italian food made with the finest quality ingredients, proudly serving the Lebanon and Lancaster area since 1980. Stop by their Campbelltown location today. You'll be happy you did. Haynes Auto Detailing, run by owner Josh Haynes, offers a professional service that is sure to have your vehicle shining from wheel to wheel. My wife and I both trust Josh with our personal vehicles, and believe me, with two kids, the back seats tend to look like a hot mess. But after a trip to Haynes Auto Detailing, the vehicles look better than brand new, both inside and out. Message Haynes Auto Detailing on Facebook or call 717-679-3673 to get your vehicle looking right today. Are you in the mood for getting out of your house this evening? Head over to Boyer's Tavern in Rexmont, PA. They have appetizers, soups, salads, wings, mouth-watering burgers, sandwiches, and many other entrees to choose from. Proper food and drinks made by slightly improper folks. Head over to Boyer's Tavern today or give them a call at 717-450-4063. In this episode, we have David Millar, first-year medical student at Penn State College of Medicine. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad you can join us and be here on the podcast.
Happy to be here.
Now, is this your first?
First podcast?
Yeah.
No, this will be my third, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So, been on a couple. They're always a great time. Yeah. It was a great time. Yeah.
So how did you hear about the American Grown Podcast?
It popped up on my social media.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Facebook, Instagram.
Instagram. Okay. So I think you interviewed some runners a little while back, like a run club or something.
Yeah, yeah. 717 run club.
Yeah. I think I saw some clip of that, and then I was kind of, I just was curious like where you were located, and then saw that you weren't that far away. And,
wow.
Yeah.
So the power of social media, that's wild.
Yeah.
That really is wild.
Yep.
So I guess and it was a video, correct? It wasn't a photo.
I believe it was a video. Yeah.
I got to start doing video again.
Yeah.
Okay.
The reels are where it's at.
I know the reach that video gets compared to a photo.
Mm-hmm.
It's unparalleled.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Wild. Okay. I always wondered. So this is our first time meeting.
Yeah.
You filled out the guest form, which thank you for that. And I wanted to talk, since we're talking about social media, your Instagram page is wild. If you were looking for inspiration, if you were looking for hustle, I mean, I scrolled through it this morning and I was ready to run through a brick wall, and that's without drinking coffee or any kind of energy drink. You know, the people that know me, I'm not too big into those kind of drinks, but like, what got you started on this path of motivation, fitness? Like David Goggins was on there.
Yeah.
Maybe some Joe Rogan, all these inspirational men and women. Do you care to share a little bit about that?
Yeah. I love Rogan. I definitely love Goggins. It kind of just started as something that, it started like way back years ago. When I was just in a lot of group chats with some of my buddies, and every morning I like to wake up, read something inspirational. Maybe it's scripture, maybe it's a motivational prompt or a video or a clip from a podcast. And basically I would just take those clips and I would send them in group chats with some of my friends just to get the day started. And then that kind of just evolved into, well, maybe I should just make a platform for this if it's something that I'm consistently doing every day. Maybe more people would appreciate it, and I would just, you know, put it out there for people to follow the account if that's something that they're interested in. And then it kind of just transpired into what it is now. It did start as like a more of a training account where I was working out a lot with my brother and trying to, we were both trying to get really fit. And then, the motivational stuff was just stuff that I'm always watching podcasts. I'm always listening to people. I just like it. I kind of just had the idea of like, if I'm already doing this and sending it into group chats, I might as well just put it out there on Instagram. And then, kind of just a lot of my stuff ended up going, getting a lot of views, and then got some follows. And I think that that's like the best way to like go about things, is to just kind of do something that like you would do anyway.
I mean, some of those posts I think had 2,000-3,000 likes, maybe more. I mean, the engagement seemed very high, and your follower count is high. And I feel like now more than ever, right, it's 2025, people are really looking at health, fitness, their life, their career path, and also looking for maybe mentors or people that are out there that are doing something that you thought was impossible, right? Like almost like a Big Brother kind of thing, where you're looking up to somebody and like, okay, if they can do it, well, I can go run 100 miles or let's start with a mile. You know what I mean? But You know what I mean? It's kind of like that motivation. People crave it, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And like, that's such a good point, because you see so many people now like running marathons, people that you went to, I don't know if it's just me, but people I went to high school with that just were never really into the fitness thing. Uh-huh. Even me, like I was never really into it that much either. And then all of a sudden it's just like I see on Instagram, people are running half marathons. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I think people just maybe want something different out of life. And running is definitely a way to get it. But
I couldn't agree more. I want to take a quick sip break, and then we're going to jump into your background and your early childhood.
Sounds good.
This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course, just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a Garage Beer. It's just beer-flavored beer. So to pick back up, before we really dive into your story, I think there's going to be a lot to unpack here, but you know, what was your childhood like? Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, so I grew up in Ocean City, New Jersey. Grew up, you know, very normal household. Did high school, did grade school. Was kind of a runner growing up too, although I never really liked it. I was kind of just good at it, and my family wanted me to do it. And can't really, you know, say too much. It was, you know, had a really good life growing up. I think that like one thing was my mindset with things was always very like intense and like stubborn and all in on things that I liked to do. So if I found something that I liked to do, I was just all consumed by it. And that started at like a very young age. And it wasn't something that I really like picked up on. It was just the way that I was, right? So I just thought everybody was like that. And kind of just always had like a desire to just do things to the max if I found like enjoyment in them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So growing up, that's kind of funny you mentioned. So you were a runner, but you didn't like it.
No, I hated it. Yeah.
Just didn't enjoy like,
no.
Yeah. The whole process.
I was like a big partier in high school. So I was on the team, but I never really hung out with a lot of people on the cross country team at high school, because I was hanging out with like the football and lacrosse people and drinking a lot and partying. And I don't know. It just at the time, like it just always seemed to get in the way of things that I wanted to do. And I knew that I just didn't, I guess it's like the cliche quote, like you never really know that you love something until it's gone. Like I stopped doing it eventually when I got out of high school. And then I figured out that, oh, actually this might have been the right thing to have in my life. But I just couldn't see that because I never really lost it or stopped doing it. I was always just forcing myself to do it, or my family was forcing me to do it. And yeah, so.
Gotcha. So you would hang out with football and lacrosse, but not the, like the cross country kids that you were running with?
Like occasionally I would, but I think like my personality back then was more just, I wanted to drink and party, and the cross country people, I mean, just like the personality types on the cross country team, it's just not really not, what they're doing.
No,
so,
no,
but I did, you know, I did talk to people on my team and like have some good friendships on my team for sure. But yeah, I was definitely more on the hanging out with other people.
Yeah. Okay. So then after like high school, what was your plan? Like, what were you thinking? Because sometimes, you know, workforce, go to college, you know, did you always want to get into, you know, medicine and you know, yeah.
Yeah. So I was a lifeguard on the beach in Ocean City. So that was like the first time I was exposed to anything medical. And I don't know, I just liked it. Like when there was like a situation on the beach, it's like you know, like a medical situation. I always wanted to know what was going on. I always thought it was cool. There's always like, there's all these protocols in place when things happen. And I liked seeing like what the protocols were and like, just witnessing helping somebody else that was, you know, hurt. So I think that was like my first exposure to medicine. And it wasn't something that I was just like, oh, I definitely want to do this, but it's something that I thought to myself, oh, I would do this. So then that led me to go to nursing school after I graduated high school. So yeah, that's where I started in nursing school. And then, time went on. I was like a sophomore in undergrad, and eventually I had a lot of things going on in my life. Like I talked about, my personality as a young kid was always like all in on things that I wanted to do, partied a lot in high school, and eventually developed like a really big addiction problem to alcohol and drugs. So I'm in nursing school and I'm trying to hold all these things together while trying to also keep up my addiction. And eventually, you know, as happens in all cases, something has to give. And ended up dropping out of school and moving back home, and yeah, just kind of spiraled out of control. I think that it was bound to happen. Like once I've picked up my first drink, it was always just like, it just did something for me that like nothing else ever did to me before. And I just felt so good, and it took away all my pain, and you know, allowed me to socialize more, allowed me to not feel nervous or anxious, allowed me to make friends, and just made me feel a type of way I'd never felt before. And yeah, so dropped out and kind of just said to myself, like, I don't really like school that much. Don't like running. I like hanging out with my friends. I like doing this like partying thing. And I'm just sold on this. Like, I'm just going to do this because I'm not finding any more enjoyment out of anything else. And it was kind of just like a white flag moment where I was just like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to do things that I don't like to do. And, yeah, as you can imagine, like that spiraled out of control very quickly.
I can imagine. Yeah. So to back up a little bit, so Ocean City, New Jersey,
right?
You're a lifeguard on the beach. Let's go back there. Right. And then we'll kind of move forward. What, was there a moment that you remember? Did you see something or save somebody's life, or do you have an experience there that really resonated with you? Cause you said that was kind of the moment where you're like, oh, I could see myself being in the medical field.
Right.
Yeah.
Not a specific like white light moment, but I do remember, yeah, like being there for, you know, like families would come up to our stand and be like, oh, like I lost my kid. And then like, you have to like kind of, that's not really like a medical thing, but it kind of is, because they're freaking out, and you have to be able to calm them down. And like, it's okay. This happens all the time. You know, the beach is like 4th of July weekend, maybe packed. The beach is packed, you know, and it always ends up being okay, but it's hard to see that for them in the moment. So like, you know, just being able to like mediate those situations, make people feel better. I had a couple, you know, rescues. I'd go out in the ocean. I mean, that always feels super cool. And then like people stepping on like fish hooks and stuff and having to call the medic down. That was always something cool. And I feel like I never really got to see enough on the beach patrol. Like, I feel like that was like the biggest thing that did for me was I always like wanted to see more. Like, we all had radios, so maybe something was happening on the beach next to me. Like, there's CPR in progress on the beach next to me. And I'm like, you know, I wish I could be there to help. Mm-hmm. I never really got anything on my beach that was very, like, you know, intense or like a white light moment. But I was always just like, you know, I always just wanted to be in those situations to where I could lend a hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I imagine that gives you kind of a good bedside manner for, you know, your future, what you're pursuing. Because you're 100% correct, right? If parents and other people are freaking out or panicking around you, you know, that escalates things. You know, right. You got to keep everyone calm. And you've mentioned a couple times, what do you call it, a white light?
Yeah.
Can you, what is that? I've never heard anybody use that before.
So I think of it as like just a moment in time that just changed everything, like right away. Okay. Like, it's not something that, I think most change happens like over a time period, but like a white light experience would be something that, you know, I saw a situation or experienced something, and since then I'd never been the same.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for explaining that. Cause I'm like, that really sounds neat, but I don't think I've ever heard anybody mention it. So from being a lifeguard, on the beaches of Ocean City, New Jersey, nursing school, where did you go?
Widener University, okay. Right outside Philly.
Yeah. I'm familiar. Okay. Yeah. Now when you were there, were you also pursuing any sports? I mean, obviously, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, it was complicated. So when I first got there, no, I told my family, I said I'd rather die than run cross country or track again. I went there,
you were done. You were done.
But then, like I said, you know, I stopped doing it, and I also had, you know, this nasty addiction working in the background too that wasn't helping anything. But kind of just got to a point where like I would wake up in the mornings and just wouldn't feel like myself. It just would feel, I don't know, sad or anxious or whatever. And, you know, I defaulted to, well, I'm not running anymore, so maybe that's why I'm feeling this way. It's definitely not my drinking. That's what I would tell myself.
Okay, but, yeah. Try to reason with yourself. Yeah.
But so I eventually did end up joining the team because of that reason. I was like, I think I do need this back in my life. So my deal was with the team that like I was just training with them. I wasn't actually running any meets. So I did that for a while until things fell apart again. But
yeah. So when would you say you started drinking? Like 17, 16?
16-ish, I think. Yeah.
And do you remember how you got introduced? Was it at a friend's house or a party, or was it just laying around at, you know, your parents' house? Not saying, you know, putting blame on anybody, but just trying to get the whole story.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you can ask whatever you want. I'm an open book. So yeah.
So
I had the opportunity to drink for the first time, like a lot before I actually did. I'd seen what alcohol had done to some people in my life. And, I honestly, before I touched it, I didn't want anything to do with it. And I didn't know like if that was going to be like a forever thing, but the moment did come when I had the opportunity to, and I, you know, drank for the first time. And yeah, like I was saying earlier, like I just remember it changing everything. It was kind of a white light experience for me.
Yeah.
When I took my first drink.
And not a good way.
No. Well, not a good way.
No. Cause I, just to share like a kind of a personal story with you, I haven't told too many people this, but maybe it's more funny than anything else, but when I was maybe, 10, 8.
Yeah.
I was at my mom's house because my mom and dad were divorced when I was young. And I've mentioned that in the podcast before, but the story is, it was a hot summer day. My mom was talking to a neighbor. You know, we kind of lived in like a townhouse, you know. So neighbors were right next door. And she was drinking what I thought was like a can of Coca-Cola or Diet Coke or something. Yeah. And I just wouldn't let her alone. I was like, Mom, you know, or, you know, obviously younger, but Mom, you know, let me have a sip. And she gave it to me because I wouldn't stop. And here it was beer. I think it was Coors Light or something. And I took a sip, I spit that. I was like, oh, this is disgusting, you know. So I never, excuse me, since then, I've never really liked beer. But yeah, that was just one of those funny kind of moments that I remember. And I was like, wow, you know. But for you, you mentioned you had like a go-to or favorite drink back then.
I would just say whatever I could get my hands on. But it's funny you say that. I have some of those experiences too when I was a really young kid, like accidentally taking sips. But yeah, I guess what I mean like by my first drink is like the first time that I actually like got drunk. Like the first time I actually like did something mentally for me, like removed me from like myself, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you remember, was that a party atmosphere?
Like, I think it was in my garage. Yeah. And it wasn't even that much. I think it was also just the idea of I'm doing something that, you know, I'm maybe not supposed to do, or just something that's like risky, or I don't know, like rebelling. I think that also played into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because I look at it as the guests that come on the podcast that open up and share their stories like you are.
Right.
You know, if we can make an impact or impact one person, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And help them out and get through something, because everyone's fighting. I mentioned this, it seems like almost every other episode, but their own demons, you know, their own problems, their own issues. And, you know, it could be anything and everything under the sun. But it's like, if we can help somebody, you know, that's what it's all about.
Oh, so important. And like, that's really the whole backbone of everything. Most things I do is like the Instagram and being in medicine now. And like, you know, the lifeguarding like played a role in like introducing me to medicine. But my desire to practice medicine comes from most of my experience, like being an addict and going through that whole medical process and, you know, having people not really understand you and you know, being difficult, because like we are difficult, you know, especially when we're not getting what we want, or if we're going through withdrawal, or, you know, it's just a very sticky situation. And that is what you just said is one of the things that gets me out of bed every morning, is that's what I want to do. Like, I feel like that's one of my purposes in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your time at Widener, you mentioned you were kind of with cross country, at least practicing with them, which is probably a good thing, because it probably gave you a schedule, maybe some discipline, right, in life, which in college I think is very important.
Yeah.
Because you can either go the party route and grades fail and you drop out, or I feel like there's two ways you can go. One is the party route. The other route is fitness and getting in shape and change your life around. But how'd the rest of your time at Widener go?
So, it was good. Like I had all the resources there to succeed. I just personally, at like a self-development level, just wasn't ready to do that. Like I was just wanted to do what I wanted to do, and nobody could really tell me anything different. But it was good. And like, the funny thing is, and I'm sure we'll get to this, like I did end up dropping out of Widener, like I said, and then, you know, eventually through a lot of trial and error got sober, but I ended up coming back to Widener as a sober version of myself, and had like, was at the same institution, was sitting in the same classes with the same professors, but instead of sitting in the back class or showing up late or not showing up at all, I'm in the front of class, like actually paying attention. Teachers know who I am. So yeah, it's funny because I feel like I was like two different people at the same exact institution, and just had this totally different experience when I changed a few things in my life and got sober and went back.
Yeah. So what were, you know, when you dropped out, what was that change? I mean, how do you go from being an addict to changing your life around?
So first I had to break, I'd say, because when I left school right away, I wasn't fully broken. I thought that what I was doing was gonna, I don't know, like do something for me. But I eventually would go home and I would keep getting high and drinking, and eventually would leave the house, and, you know, bad terms with my family, bad terms with my siblings, burnt a lot of bridges down, and people kind of just like signed me off, and I was just, you know, eventually I had nowhere to go. I was homeless for a little bit, and in and out of psych wards, in and out of rehabs, detoxes.
Whoa.
And yeah, I'd go like down to Florida, because Florida's like a big addiction recovery hub. They got a lot of like rehabs and detoxes down there. I'd go down there and then somehow like make my way back up to Jersey, and then people would think I was doing good, and then I'd, you know, text my guy, and then all of a sudden I'm like right back to where I was, because it's like a progressive illness, they call it. Okay. So like,
explain,
even if you get like 30 days clean under your belt, and then like you decide to go back out again and pick up a drug or pick up a drink, like right when you like within a couple hours of like taking that drink, it's like you're kind of like right back to where you were almost. It doesn't like wow. There's no like reset button.
Yeah.
So yeah, I experienced that, and just like in and out of that a while, for a while, and it was just, you know, it was hell. I mean, it's just not like, it's not fun, but eventually like you just get to a point where you're like physically dependent on things and mentally dependent in a way too, because you just feel like you can't really live without them, and you're in such like a dark, deep abyss that you just can't even fathom a way out, and you can't see any light. And I feel like I needed to be in that place though to understand that like this actually was a terrible idea, and like this is like not going to work for me. And also it showed me like my true colors. Like it showed me that like my best decision making led me here. So yeah. Like maybe I need to stop listening to myself and like listen to some of these people that I'm seeing at rehab, or I'm seeing in detox, or I'm seeing at a psych ward that are, you know, trying to help me, but I don't see it as help, because like I you don't know how to help me. Like I know how to help me. Yeah. It's always my attitude. So
that, I mean, it has to be hell on your body, on your mental health. So, you know, you mentioned siblings and like mom and dad. How many siblings do you have?
I have a younger brother, younger sister.
Okay, so you're the oldest.
Yeah.
Dang, man. I'm the oldest too. I have two younger sisters and a younger brother. My younger brother's 9 years younger, but I feel like as the older sibling, this is my thoughts, like sometimes I feel like the weight of the world is on the older sibling's shoulders, yeah. Right? Because parents, they learn from you first, because you're the firstborn, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But yet also they expect a lot from you, mm-hmm. You know? And sometimes those pressures get put on, and then sometimes people turn to things. But so you're the oldest, younger siblings. Are you still close with family? I mean,
yeah, very close with family.
And
now
they support
that,
what you're doing?
Oh, for sure. I mean, they saved my life. I mean, my mom and, I mean, everybody in my family was like, eventually got to a point where they needed to practice tough love. But, you know, when somebody close to you is going through that, it's like the first thing you want to do is like overly help the person, probably help them too much, you know, to the point where you're going to enable them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened. And I took advantage of that. And then quickly, you know, you learn that like, oh no, maybe like tough love is the best way to handle this situation. But yeah, I mean, every time that I was ready to like go back into treatment, or, you know, would need a plane ride down to Florida to go back into rehab, I mean, you know, my mom would help me out, or my dad, or my sister, like my brother. So yeah, we're very close now though, now that all this is said and done. And yeah, it's funny because like I got sober and it was like really like my thing, but like it's affected my whole entire family, because you know, I just celebrated my 6 year anniversary last month on the 22nd. So six
Congrats,
years of being,
man.
Thanks.
Wow.
And you know, they all came up to Hershey, and we went out, and we're always just like reminiscing on, you know, what it was like 6 years ago, and it was just a total mess. But it's just fun now to like, you know, at the time it wasn't fun, but like now it is, to like look back on that and just be like, wow, like, thank God, you know. I don't know what intervened or like what happened to like get me in a spot to where like I actually got the help I needed. But yeah, it's just, you know, I still try to like make it up to them, because I really did like put them through the ringer, as well as myself. So
yeah. What's your mom and dad's first name?
Rose and John.
Rose and John. Shout out to you guys. Yeah. Phenomenal parents. And that's what it's all about, right? And I've mentioned this on other episodes, but having that rock, that support system, you know, parents, siblings, close friends. So like, gosh, so you were obviously drinking, you know, that was the thing, but you mentioned also drugs. Was there a drug of choice or?
Yeah. Cocaine and crack cocaine.
No shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's some serious stuff. I don't know, but I just from little I know.
Yeah. I don't know. I did it the first time. I don't even know when. It was during a party in the summer, and I did a line of cocaine, and I mean, it did something. So like I said, drinking did something for me that nothing has ever done for me up until the point I did my first line of cocaine, because then cocaine did for me something that drinking never did for me or anything else in my life ever did for me. And it just made me feel like Superman. And then right when I did that, I knew that that was what I wanted to do. It just like, I felt so good, and I'd never felt like chemically that good ever before in my whole entire life. And I wanted that all the time. And eventually, like, you know, I would get more and develop a bigger habit of it and then run out of money. So then when you run out of money, it's like you need to resort to things that are cheaper to get the same high. I was always just into stimulants because also there's also like heroin and then there's also like Xanax and stuff. And those are more like depressants and they don't really like amp you up as much. I was always just, I mean, if you had a Xanax, like I wasn't going to turn it down. Like I'm cool to take a Xanax, yeah. But I would get way more excited if you had like a bag of cocaine or something like that.
Dang. Wow. And you mentioned, so you actually had like a plug, somebody you could call up and.
Yeah. He delivers.
Dang.
Yeah.
So you got that deep that you had a personal, you probably, you know, had a connection, a cell phone, you know what I mean?
To call.
Mm-hmm. So at some point, and maybe you mentioned this, I'm sorry if you do, but at some point, obviously you dropped out, but was there a moment where you're like, I got to change my life? Like, obviously you're going in and out of, you mentioned maybe psych wards and rehab down to Florida. What was it? Was it somebody there that, you know, was going through it with you? Or what was that moment that you're like, okay, I got to get to AA and I got to take care of myself?
Yeah. It wasn't really like a white light experience. Like I got on the plane down to Florida, 'cause that's where I got sober for good. I went back down to Florida and it was just like, I got on the plane with the same intentions. I was like, I don't really know what's going to happen down here. I'm not really sure if I'm going to stay sober, but I'm out of options right now. So I need to go. And I went down there and basically what happened is I met a group of younger people, at this rehab that were excited about AA and excited about sobriety and just had a totally different mindset on what recovery actually is. And every time I'd went to rehab before that, I never really got that enthusiasm out of any of the clients there. And, you know, I also myself was not enthusiastic about being there. So, it was just like kind of a different experience for me. And I was kind of forced by necessity to like hang out with these kids because everybody else at the rehab was a little bit older than me. So I just gravitated naturally toward this group of people. And yeah, they were just like excited about the possibility of what would happen if they were able to kick this thing to the curb and, you know, live their life as a sober individual. And I just got down with that idea. I was just like, that sounds interesting. Like, I don't know. Like, this has been consuming my mind for so long now. And it's just been all that I ever think about. I don't know, like, what my life would look like. It's scary to think about, but like, maybe it's good scary. So that was like the first thing that I remember being like, okay, like maybe I should actually try to do this. And then that just kind of kicked things off and I was a little bit more open-minded and I didn't want to go back home. That was like a big thing. 'Cause I knew if I went back home, there'd be triggers at home, you know, I could text my guy that he would be right down the street or whatever. And I knew that like, I should stay down there. It would be the best for my sobriety. And then I did, and I ended up getting an opportunity to go, to California actually to a program out there, for, people trying to get sober. It's a sober living house. So basically you live at a house with a bunch of other roommates. And, that was like a year long program and it was very intensive and, like almost like a behavioral modification boot camp type of thing. Like mm-hmm. You have to make your bed every morning. You have to be up at a certain time. You need to go to AA meetings every day. You need to work a 12-step program. And you need to clean your dish. You can't be a mess. You need to do your laundry. All these just like little tiny rules, that were implemented in my life for a year long duration and totally ended up, you know, changing my life. 'Cause I never really operated like that as a person. Mm-hmm. So
do you still do some of those, even though they're small tasks, do you still do them? Like make your bed and things like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Every morning I make my bed. Yeah. And it's because of that house. And I do a lot of things because of that house. I clean my dishes because we used to have to write essays if we, didn't clean a dish or didn't make your bed in the morning. Okay. It was like a big accountability thing. So like if me and you are at the house, we're both roommates and you see me like not make my bed in the morning, you have, as a client of the house, you have to write something called a strike. You have to write three actually every single day on your roommates.
Oh, wow.
So you have to kind of be hunting all day. Like, oh, is David like, you know, is David not going to do his laundry? His laundry basket looks like we'd call it overflowing laundry. If your laundry went above a certain line in your laundry basket, you are susceptible to get a strike written on you.
Okay.
And so you would be like, okay, David's laundry's overflowing. we'd wake up the next morning, the whole entire strike board gets read off. So everybody in the house writes their strikes on a piece of paper, on a board.
Yeah.
And that would be like 500 words for me. So wow. if I didn't do my laundry, if I left a dirty cup in the sink.
That'd probably be me. I'm always leaving dishes in the sink. Yeah. My wife would agree. So, okay. So you get a strike. So you give me one, I give you one. If you got one strike, you have to write, or you get three.
Yeah, so you could get a ton of strikes. If you're just having a bad day and you like didn't forget to make your bed, you leave two cups in the sink and then you leave a dish on the coffee table in the living room because you were watching TV, people are going to see that. They're going to be like, whose plate is this? Oh, yeah. It's David's. Like, all right, I'm going to clean it up and I'm going to write them down on the strike board. And then the next morning, that's the first thing we did in the mornings is we read off the strike board. So like it'd be like, David left his plate on the coffee table, 300 words. David's laundry is overflowing, plus 500 words. Wow. You know, just whatever I messed up on the previous day before, I had to write about the next day.
Oh, she had to write about, like, why you didn't put your dishes away or clean your dishes and make your bed?
Yeah, so it's, like, a complex process. So you're not writing about, like, specifically what you did wrong. There's a lot of, like, chores in the house, and one of the chores is you're a work coordinator. So you're the person that kind of makes sure that the strike board is all nice and, like, clean and replaced every day. And you're taking care of, like, you know, people are writing words every single day. So you're counting the words that people are writing to make sure they're writing all their words. And the work coordinator, as their chore of the house, is also responsible for writing three different prompts out for what people that have words that day have to write about. So two of them would be like self-development, recovery kind of prompts. Maybe like, what was something that you took away from last night's Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and then you write about that. And then the third one was always like something different. So a good one to have would be like song lyrics. Like sometimes they'll just be like, write your favorite song lyrics, and you can just mindlessly like write your words. Yeah. So
wow, what an interesting like concept and idea. How many people would be in the house? Right?
So there was two houses, but my house like 15 of us.
Wow. Okay. Us, yeah. So over 10. Wow.
Yeah.
So some of those things you still practice and do to this day. So obviously it had an effect, a change on your life. How would you say AA has shaped your outlook on life?
Yeah. So AA has been amazing. I was never really that into it when I was out west because, I mean, I was going, but I was also in this big sober living community at the house. So I just never really needed to branch out more than I had friends at the house, so I didn't need to like meet any extra people, right? But eventually I'd be in California, I'd finish the program at the house, I'd graduate, and I decided I wanted to come back to school, so I'd go back to Widener. And when I came back here, I didn't know anybody that was sober, especially nobody like my age that was sober either. So I was like, I don't know how I'm gonna be able to like figure this out, because I'm coming home, I've been sober for like a year at this point, but still I'm a little worried about it because I want to go back to a college campus I was previously at.
Right.
You know, I'll probably go back home to Jersey on the weekends, maybe. I haven't been back home, you know, and like there's a lot of things I want to do. So I'm sorry, I forget the original question.
it was like AA, how has it shaped your life?
I get home and like I had to rely on AA, right? Because like I knew if I go to AA meetings, I'm gonna find people that are sober. So I ended up meeting people that would change my life. A lot of people in Ocean City too. That's like probably my favorite spot to do AA, which is ironic because when I was coming back home from California, I didn't even know that they had AA meetings in Ocean City. They have AA meetings everywhere though. There's a lot of people that are sober.
Yeah. Phenomenal.
Yeah. So I'd go to meetings and like, put up my hand and like, I just met like some of the best people like I've ever gotten to meet in the rooms. And some of them are older than me and like have families, and some of them are my age, but like it doesn't matter in AA. Like you're just trying to like help each other out, and like you just have a common you have a common like problem. Like you have this thing that like you've all had to go through, and like this just the way that your mind thinks is very similar, and it kind of just like brings you very close very quickly to these people. Yeah, I mean, it's, for one, like, it's given me amazing friendships. It's helped me, establish myself when I came back home and wanted to be an undergraduate student again as a sober person, somebody who had a problem. You know, it gave me a place to go, and it's all free of charge. You know, it's not, there's no strings attached to it. Like, it's just like a, it's literally just there to help people. And, you know, then there's also, I mean, I could talk about it forever, but there's, you know, the 12 steps associated with it. And, you know, you go through the steps, it's like a healing process, and, you know, meetings, and the big, you know, the Alcoholics Anonymous like book. So there's just a lot of things that are associated with that program that, you know, allowed me to like heal and really get through this.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a, would you be willing to share like a connection or a friendship that you still have to this day from AA?
Yeah. So I'll tell a story. So I get sober, and eventually I pick up running again, and I get into running ultra marathons. So I'm
that's running for real. Yeah. That's serious running.
So I'm in Ohio, and I'm running my first ultra marathon 100 miler, and I get to, like, it's going really good, and I get to like mile 80, and mile 80 comes, and it's like I've been running probably for over, I don't know, like maybe 18 hours at this point. And it's like 11 o'clock at night. It's cold. It's like December in Ohio, just this random little town where there was just happened to be this race that me and my friend signed up for. And I'm like, I'm going to quit. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I can't keep going. My feet were like not actually broken, but they felt like they were broken. And like, I just like, I was done, and I was ready to throw the towel in. And I was just like, let me just call my one friend really quick, Bill. And, you know, it's like, Bill is like a 50 plus year old guy. He's just like one of my great friends, and has helped me out through so much. And, you know, when my mind goes to like, I want to quit, then the next thing I think is like, well, I'm going to call Bill, because Bill's going to tell me like how it is. So I call Bill, it's 11 at night, and I'm like, dude, like, you got to tell me to keep going. And Bill says to me, I'm not hanging up the phone with you until you cross the finish line. And it's 11 at night when I called him. I still had 20 miles to go. I didn't finish the 100-mile race until like 4:30 in the morning, and Bill stayed on the phone with me the whole entire time, the rest of the race. He talked me through every step. He was like reading some of like my Instagram quotes to me through the phone to fire me up. And at one point he actually even like put on his own running shoes in Ocean City, New Jersey. No. I'm in Ohio. He's like getting so lit up. He's like, I'm going to go on a run. It's 3 a.m. He's running circles around his house in Ocean City. I'm running circles in Ohio to finish my 100 miler. And, that's just like one example of like, from that moment on, I call him a one ring friend. He's somebody I can call. He picks up on the first ring. Like, he's got a small army answering his phone calls for him. And like, I don't get that anywhere else other than AA. And like, he's just like, he's like a friend to me and like a mentor. He's like all these like things like in one. And, you know, I have on top of Bill, it's like, I have a bunch of people and just people that I've like met in this program that have like changed my life. And like, they're older than me too. Right. So like, they have so much like experience, and like, they have like experience with having a family and having kids. And like, you know, I was coming in the rooms at like 19, 20 years old. I mean, I haven't had a legal drink. So like, when I was coming in the rooms, I was very young. I didn't know like how to be an adult. Like, so I needed people like Bill in my life to kind of like guide me and be my friend and like be hard on me, but also like be soft on me, like when I needed that. And, so that's just like, that's one example.
Wow. Let's take a snack break real quick. Yeah. This snack break is brought to you by Jerky Beef Jerky. When late night editing episodes for the podcast, Jerky Beef Jerky keeps me fueled and ready to go with 11 grams of protein, high quality ingredients, and no nitrates or nitrites. With 5 different flavors to choose from, Jerky Beef Jerky, eat meat, repeat. So I gotta ask you, because I saw your phone on the table. Do you think if we call Bill now, he'd pick up?
Dude,
do you think he would?
I think he would.
Do you want to give it a ring?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's just give it a ring here. So we're gonna call Bill, which is David's friend from AA. His mentor. Maybe a little closer to the mic.
Yeah. Two rings.
He called it.
Yo.
Two rings.
Yeah, I know. Dude, I'm on a podcast right now, and I was just telling the story about the Hunter Myler, like, one ring friend, and Austin was like, oh, do you think if we called Bill right now, he'd pick up? And I was like, yeah.
Two rings.
Yeah.
And I'm in kidney failure. I need a new kidney, dude.
Dude, I my mom's been telling me. I've been
Yeah, your mom's cool.
Yeah, she is.
So what are you talking about on the podcast? Maybe I can give you some enlightenment.
Yeah, we want, is it okay if he
says
something?
That's perfect. Yeah. Bill, whatever you'd like. I'm here with David. You know him better than I do. If you want to share a story or maybe how you met him, or if you want to just drop some knowledge, we're listening.
Wow. What's the subject matter of the podcast?
David's life story. We've talked a lot about AA and his past experiences. And, of course, you know, we're getting ready to talk about his medical career and such. But really, it's called American Grown Podcast. It's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all that good stuff. And it's people's journeys, and it's their life journey and where they started to where they are now. So you're free to speak about whatever you'd like.
Wow. Well, yeah, my name's Bill Lombard. I'm a really good friend of David Millar's. I think I use David as my father. He's like my fatherly example. Because my dad was a workaholic, and he always went to work. So I didn't get to know my dad all that well. But when I met David, he really gave me a lot of hope, because he just seemed to be very channeled. And as an alcoholic, to be channeled is next to impossible. Like, we tend to be all over the map. And I think he had gotten all that stuff out in his drinking and drugging. Somehow he got all the mania shaken out. So his first day sober, he must have became a very channeled spiritual man. And I say that, like, really in a sense of excitement for him.
Yeah.
But really for me, I'm not selfish. So I'm 60 years old. I don't like how my 59th year ended, so I'm going to redo that.
I like it.
So I'm 59 twice. And,
yeah.
Like, it's really important. Like, alcoholics who are sober have the ability to go back. They get redos, they get do-overs, and sometimes they see the same miracle twice. And I think that's where David is. So not only did he get sober and graduate, like, from college, he got redirected in college. And how it works, it talks about turning points, right?
Yeah.
So he stood at the turning point over and over and over and over. And then the alky has this incredible power within them. It's like the sixth sense.
Yeah.
But it's even more powerful than that. It's almost superhuman, because it comes from God. And we get redirected so powerfully, we can go run 100 miles, and we can go, like, change our direction, our trajectory at any point in time. Like, go to medical school. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Why not?
Right.
Why not?
It doesn't define you.
I think the coolest story is that there was one day where he could have gotten dropped off in Kensington or gotten on an airplane.
Yeah.
And he chose to get on an airplane, and he's never looked back.
There you go.
And I think sobriety's kind of like that. At 30,000 feet, you'll meet some of the most amazing people who have been to hell and who know where heaven is. And if you're going to take a plane ride, why not go to Florida?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And David, how old are you? 27?
26.
So, like, the coolest part about probably being 26 is that you're not 60.
Yeah.
You don't have to go through, like, I didn't get sober when I was 40.
Yeah.
You don't have to go through all the hell and pain, all the shattered lives, like, all the warped lives of blameless children, your wife crying at you. Like, none of that has to happen. Like, you can write the most beautiful story ever.
Amen to that, yeah. Yeah.
Like, and like, the massive responsibility that comes with this whole deal, you got to pass it on.
Yep.
Yep. I like that.
You gotta pass it on.
Yeah.
Bill. So, yeah.
That's perfect, Bill. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I appreciate it. Please.
Yep. Happy to do it. Yeah, and you know what the value of being a one-ring guy is at 60 years old?
Yes, sir, what?
You get to be a little slow, so it becomes two rings.
Hey, you still picked up, though. Yeah, that impressed me. So, Bill, that was awesome. I appreciate it, yeah.
All that while I need a kidney, so... Try to get me a kidney, David.
All right.
We'll do our best.
Yeah, I will. I just got done my kidney block, so.
There you go.
I'm praying for you, man.
Yeah, that's the other Alky tool. We got prayer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got to go. I got to get in the miracle line, and we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yo, don't ever discount how powerful this illness is. Stay sober, guys.
All right.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Love you guys.
Love you, brother.
Love you too, brother.
Thanks for picking up. Later. See you.
Always.
I tell you, that was awesome. Shout out to Bill. And I'll tell you what. Shout out to Bill. You know, I've had another gentleman on the podcast. We had talked about the power of saying, like, I love you and being there for somebody, whether it's your friends, family, or, you know, somebody that you met in AA. You know what I mean? And sometimes I feel like as guys, we're not supposed to share emotions or say I love you, but like, it's like if you're a brother with somebody, it's a true bond. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And I'm not talking like family. I'm talking like you got good friends, you got good acquaintances, whatever it is. And I just thought that was really neat, you know, because you can tell you guys, you mean it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's real.
Yeah, yeah. He's been an amazing friend and mentor, and I can't say enough about him and other people that I met in AA. It's just been very life changing for me. And yeah. Like Bill said, like I want to give that back to other people too. Like I came into AA when I was on the younger side, and I didn't have there wasn't a lot of other younger people that at the time were getting sober before they were 21. And I never really had that person. So I want to be that for other people that are coming in. Like I want to show people, especially on the Instagram and all that, like, you know, it's okay to get sober at a young age. It's okay to like not depend on alcohol to be happy. Like there's other ways that, you know, you can get meaning and purpose out of life other than drinking. So that's my mission for sure.
Yeah. And you still do AA and you're still running, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Both good. Of things, good. Yeah. Good. Fantastic. So let's get to like what inspired you then to pursue a career in medicine? Like obviously we talked about being on the beach and stuff, but like, you know, what is your goal? Because I mean, that's a lot of commitment. That's years of your life, yeah. You know, schooling. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was just, you know, being in the addiction realm and going through the hospital system myself as a patient and kind of just seeing like what it was, and that mixed with my desire to already do medicine in general, like to go to nursing school. And I kind of just fell in love with the idea of like maybe I could – I just felt like I had like a firm understanding of what it was to like be on the other side of like being a doctor, like to be the patient in the gown sitting on the bed. Like I know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. And like I was talking about earlier, like I know what it feels like to be not understood in the medical system and to kind of like, you know, have the stigma going on about like my problem and my disease. So I felt like I felt driven to maybe change that narrative in the health system. And yeah, I remember going back to nursing school and I was learning like biology and chemistry, and I was never a good student when I was, drinking. I didn't have good grades and my SAT scores were terrible. And, I never studied or did, you know, showed up to class. So, when I did start trying though, I was in these classes that were science classes and I fell in love with, like biology and chemistry. And, you know, I was sitting in the front of my class and I was doing well on my tests and my professors were like noticing who I was and inviting me to like do research in their like lab outside of class, which was amazing because like I just had never been that person before. Like I was a person that like the professors were yelling at to like stop talking during class, or, you know, if you're going to talk the whole time, then don't even come.
Just get out, right? Yeah, yeah. So complete 180 of what you were.
Yeah, so then that was the time when, like, my next year in nursing school would have been clinicals, which means, like, I'm outside of the classroom, I'm in the hospital. And at the time, I was like, I kind of want to be in the classroom more. And then I started looking at other options and I started, you know, pondering the idea of, like, medicine and medical school and taking it to that next level. And, you know, if I was to do medicine, then I'd have to do a bunch of other classes that were all biochemistry, chemistry, biology. And okay. I kind of saw that and I was like, you know, I was down for it. And you know, that tacked onto it being like a huge challenge too. Like, I think I'm attracted to things that are, you know, like seem impossible.
Yeah.
And yeah, all those factors like combined together, I kind of just like had this desire to like, I want to go to medical school. I want to be a physician. Like, I want to make a difference like in the system. And I think that I don't want to let my experience of like going through the health system as a suffering addict, like go to waste. Like I want to use that for good.
Yeah. And I think what I like about that is, this is just my take, but you've been in that person's shoes. So therefore, if you're taking care of them, you kind of know what they've been through, you know, mm-hmm. and what they're going through. And it's crazy because the little time I've known you, you know, this yeah. couple of minutes here we're recording, I could definitely tell your maybe a characteristic or your personality is to try hard things and achieve them, right? Not try, but do, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can tell the fitness journey, obviously, you know, if you put your mind to it, you seem like the guy that's going to do it. You right. know what I mean? Like, if you say you're going to do it, you're going to do it. Where I feel like the old you, like you mentioned, would just be like, no, I'm done. You yeah. know, I don't need this. It's a small world because my younger brother, who I said was 9 years younger, yeah. he's going to be, I believe, an RN. And he's just nice. Finishing. He's in his last, like, he's into clinicals and all that.
Nice.
And then my youngest sister on my mom's side, she is a physician's assistant. Like, she did all yeah. the stuff and nice, the clinicals nice. And everything. Yeah, she went to Temple and then, what is it, Salus M? I'm sorry. DeSalle, maybe she'll kill me, but anyway, so like obviously it's great career field because yeah. it's job security, you know yeah. what I mean, they always need somebody, medical is always going to be around, so
right.
you know, is there something now that you're how many more years
let's get so 3 more years of medical school and then I'll have to do residency.
Okay,
so residency is like your training program, so like I'll decide what I want to go into, whether it's surgery, not surgery, like, I don't know, it could be anything, right? Like dermatology, GI, renal, like kidneys.
Yeah.
I'll decide like what kind of doctor I want to like be. And then based on that, there's like a residency length. So I'll stay at Penn State or I'll go somewhere and do like, could be anywhere from 3 to 7 years of, residency training, which is kind of like a rough time. Like you're working like 80 hour weeks and you're, you know, not getting paid a lot and you're still kind of a student, but you're not like in the classroom. You're now like in the hospital, like
so you're learning. Practicing.
Yeah. Learning. You're practicing yeah. and you know, your physicians that you're working with are teaching you. And then after that, you'll become like a full-time physician. So I have 3 more years of school and then I'll have to go into residency depending Dang. On what I want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a journey.
It's a journey.
Right? Just like getting
yeah.
sober.
Right.
It's a journey.
Yeah.
So what is your take on, you know, Penn State College of Medicine? What is it like, being a student there?
It's great. It's great. When I was at Widener, like I would always like, I don't really think it was like Widener's fault, but like I was like so fired up when I was at Widener to like do what I wanted to do that like I'd be in the library till the library at Widener would like close at 11 p.m. So like I would like on Fridays. Yeah. So I'd be at Widener till like the second that the library is closing. Like I'd be getting kicked out of the library. Like it's wow. like it's Friday night. Like go do something else. Like why
yeah,
are you
yeah,
here?
Why are you here?
And
no,
I'm
just
yeah.
kidding.
I'm just kidding. And yeah. I hated it. Like I was like, why can't I like, you know, cause at the time, like to get into med school, like you have to take something called the MCAT. It's like an 8 hour long test. Like I don't take tests like that. Like that's not something yeah. So like, I'm like just grinding at Widener and like, I'm getting kicked out of study spaces and I like can't, you know, I don't want to study at my house because like, it's just noisy. And so then like, you know, I go through like my time at Widener and then I come here and it's just like, libraries 24/7, you know, buildings like 24/7 nice. Access. So now I can kind of just like, all right, cool. Like I'm just in the spot now where I can like, you know, just do what I want to do and like spend time like learning. And, so that's been great about it. It's also just it's a beautiful place. And, they're very focused on like treating the whole person. Not getting like bogged down in like the scientific, like, which I love, but you know, medicine is also like an art and like, you need to know how to talk to people. You need to know how to, you know, like I was talking about how parents would come up freaking out because they lost their kid. Like you need to know how to like level with people and like have like a calm aura and like presence about you to like really like, you know, provide the full length of care that is like expected as a physician. And Penn State's really big on that, whereas other schools like aren't. Like they're like, yep, here's the science, here's the biology, here's the chemistry, here's the drug that you used to treat it with, done, let's move on. Penn State's like incorporated in their curriculum is like, here's how you like talk to patients, like here's what you say, here's how we expect you to like handle a situation like this, or here's a situation that like is complicated that like you might not have thought about yet, but you are going to run into this in the future. So let's talk about this now so you're prepared. So I really like that about it too.
Yeah. I think that's huge. You know what I mean? Cause you got to connect with people, right? Yeah. It's all about connections, all about people, relationships. And if they feel like, you're rough around the edges or you don't care, or if you're being just like a robot, you know, it's like, oh, you know, we're people at the end of the day. Yeah. You know what I mean? So what would you say, or what do you hope people take away from your story, especially those who feel like they've already messed up and their chances aren't good?
That it's never too late. And it doesn't matter like how bad things are. They can always get better. I would say that like there is, it's okay to be broken. It's okay to not know where you're at right now. The only thing that matters is just like having a desire to be better. And, I really hope to like inspire people that are, you know, younger and struggling with drug addiction and, you know, can't really find a way out, because I felt that way for many, many of years. And even after I got sober, it's like that first year of sobriety of like, you know, the pain in my head, and like, cause I was medicating myself for so long that like, I wasn't acclimated to like how hard like real life can be and how hard just waking up in the morning can be. Like I had anxiety, I had depression, and like I had no self-belief, I had no self-confidence. And, I just want to tell people that like, it's okay to feel that way and it doesn't have to be that way. But like, in order to like get past that, like it does require like certain things to be set in place in your life. So I don't know. I just want to be like a person that can, people can reach out to, or people can see that like, you know, just maybe lights a fire, in somebody's heart.
So I would say for you, it's been a mix of friendships, right? Relationships, the running, right? Fitness.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just AA and probably your will to succeed or to better yourself. That's kind of how you've been, what'd you say, 6 years? I mean, that's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. 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 I think it's just like getting through that initial, like first, like 6 months to year and a half of being sober, because it's just like for an alcoholic that's been medicating themselves for so long, it's just like such an uncomfortable stage. And like, there's physical manifestations, there's mental manifestations, there's spiritual pain. It's just like, and then you go through that and like, you realize that like it, you know, you walked through like this massive amount of pain and it made you stronger. And then, you know, you get to the other side and you're just like, huh, like I should probably like, maybe pain isn't like a bad thing. Like maybe I need like a healthy dose of like war in my life.
Yeah.
You know? So then that's where like the running came in. It was like, all right, I need like, I'm sober now, like I'm good, but like I need more things in front of me. Like I need to like figure out like more about who I am. I need to figure out like what it is I want to do. And like running is just like, has been like a therapist in my life for that. I mean, it's just like I put on the shoes and I run like 10 miles. It's like, it's better than a therapy session. And I like self-discover, and I like it just, everything becomes like clear to me, you know, in small doses. And it's just like, that's how I found medicine. You know, it's just like, by doing things that are just like hard and, you know, are almost like meditative, and just being like willing and brave enough to like look deep into yourself and just be like, what do I want to do? Like, what are my assets? What are my strengths? And like, once you figure out what they are, then it's like, okay, I need to use these to like not only serve myself, but like serve the world.
Yeah. You know? I think where you're uncomfortable the most, right, is where you have the most potential to grow.
Yeah.
That's why I look at it. And I noticed you started your, it's talking about running, but you started your stopwatch. When you came in, I'm like, he knows he's not running, right? But I'm guessing you're like timing the podcast.
I just want to make sure we don't go over. Yeah. I want to respect your time.
Oh, that's awesome, David. All right, man. Yeah. I respect that. And then I got to ask your shirt, because in big letters, it says 3 a.m.
Yeah. This, so this is, I actually sell these shirts. This is one that I made. It says go deeper on the back too. I actually made it, like, it was inspired by the 100 mile that I ran in Ohio and the phone call with Bill. So, because that was like one of the, I don't know, that was like very difficult time in my life when I was like at that breaking point of like, I really wanted to stop, but I didn't. And, yeah, so that's where the shirt came from. But I also have other shirts that say like hardcore stuff on them that are on my Instagram. So
I was gonna say, how can people purchase them?
I don't really sell them anymore because I don't have a lot of time to figure out how all that works. But okay. Yeah, so they're kind of off the market now. Oh, dude,
that's a pretty sick shirt, I'm not gonna lie.
Thanks,
man. Like when I saw it, I'm like, okay, it's gotta be like David Goggins tied in or something, because like 3 a.m. you're getting up to run or something. But all right, well maybe if you have any lying around, if people wanted, they could DM you and maybe
no, get a couple. Sure.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, we're going to start closing out. How can our listeners connect with you on the interwebs?
Yeah. So, my Instagram is @David_Millar_mindset. That's basically where I post everything. So yeah, if you want to follow me, if you want some motivational content every day, definitely, follow my Instagram.
Some kick-ass motivational content the daily. Yeah. So before we close out, is there anything else you'd like to talk about that maybe I didn't know or that we didn't cover?
No, I think we talked about a lot. I would like to ask you though, you've done a lot, over 100 episodes of podcasting. What's like the number one thing that you would say in terms of, self-help, self-development, like you, and it could be like, I guess, entrepreneurial, like too, like what's like the number one piece of advice that you would give, somebody based on all the people that you've talked to, all the, startups that you've talked about? I know you have a lot of like people that start companies on your podcast. So.
Yeah. There's been some amazing guests and people that I've, like yourself, I met for the first time.
Yeah.
And I would say two things kind of have resonated with me. Maybe a third, but the first one that came to my mind when you started asking this is faith. A lot of people I've talked to have faith, believe in Jesus Christ, believe in the Lord, believe in God and our Savior and things like that. And I know some people might be like, but everyone's on their different journey with their faith. And for me, I've had so many guests, out of 120, probably, or 128, probably half have deep in faith. And it's like, well, maybe I should start looking at that a little bit more myself, internally. So I think you have to have a strong faith in whatever you believe, but you should have some sort of faith. And I'm not pushing it, but from guests that have sat in that same chair, faith. The other thing that I've learned a lot about is discipline. If you want to be successful, you need to be disciplined. This goes back to Greg Munyon and Mitch Spittle, the ultra runners. You probably the video you saw.
Yep.
Discipline, just like you do, the small tasks, making your bed, washing the dishes, cleaning up the house, these little things that if you do them on a regular basis, if you do little things right, the big picture will follow. The big things will follow, I've learned. So discipline, faith and discipline, I would say the top two. The third one I'd add, I would say more so my own perspective in life and doing sales here at Color Tech, the family business, and just in general is being persistent. Like, you have to be persistent and be doggedly persistent, go all in, because no one's going to believe in you except you. You know what I mean? Like, when I started the podcast, I'm thinking, okay, what are people going to think? Do I even sound good? You have all these doubts, but if you're persistent and disciplined and just keep grinding at it, I found that is success. And then if you're deep in your faith, from what guests have told me, from some of my experiences, it's a win-win, So I would say faith, discipline, and being persistent. I mean, I've had quite a few doors shut in my face, for sales, here at the family business, and not because I was rude, but because I kept going back and just keep showing up. And eventually it shows, whether it's sales or anything, it shows that you want the work. You want to earn that opportunity. If you're persistent at something, anybody can stop in once, drop off a business card, or do one episode of a podcast, maybe five, and then you let it flounder and you don't do it. But if you keep going, success will follow, I believe.
Amen.
100%. I like it. That was a great question. I think you're like the first guest that's ever asked me a question.
Really?
That was pretty cool. I mean, people have like, we have conversation, but no one's ever been that was cool. I appreciate it. Well, David, I'm gonna close it out. If you're good,
Man,
we'll end it.
Yep.
You're always welcome back in the chair, and if Bill's ever in the area, he's more than welcome on too, if he's listening. So David Millar, first year medical student at Penn State College of Medicine, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review.
To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Modern Gent Customs is your go-to for all your custom apparel and headwear needs. From individuals to businesses, with no minimums or design fees ever, inquire today at info@moderngentcustoms.com.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Hostler Engraving is your local source for unique, quality-driven laser-engraved gifts for all occasions. Place an order today by visiting our Facebook page at Hostler Engraving. You won't be disappointed.
Are you in the mood for some mouth-watering Italian dinners? Homemade bread, cheese steaks, hot subs, cold subs, salads, sides, and of course, delicious pizza? Look no further than Angelo's, located at 1032 South 5th Ave, Lebanon. Call 717-273-8579 to place your order now. Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.